podcast is brought to you by Sugatan. Sugatan Effect Podcast, a podcast dedicated to e-commerce growth. On the show, we interview business owners, media buyers, CRO specialists, and growth experts to help scale your business to seven and eight figures. The podcast is brought to you by Sugatan, performance experts in the e-commerce industry. Let's increase your ROI.
John, welcome to whichever the episode is, the number is. You're here for the third time, and actually Chris was making jokes of us, saying that we're besties.
We are besties. I feel like a Sugatan veteran, even though I've never met Chris, so maybe she needs to join on one of these.
Actually, yeah, I should have asked her to come on this podcast episode. Maybe next time, or maybe when you come to Mexico, you're going to hang around with us.
Yeah, I need to find my passport first. But right when we finally decide when it's going to happen, I'll find it. I know I'll figure it out. I'm excited. No, I haven't been to Mexico for a long time, so it'd be a treat to be able to join you.
And we haven't actually met in person as well. And like we started chatting maybe a year ago at a similar time. And we are talking probably on the phone every week or so when we're high. Actually, when I'm high, usually, not you.
That's one of the funny things in general, though. We've actually, so since we spoke on the podcast last, a lot has obviously happened. But my co-founder and I of the agency, so I have just for some background for the listeners, I've founded since we spoke last a performance agency, which I wrote about in your group as well. But my own agency, and actually my co-founder, Ryan, we had never met in person. Our agency was doing six figures in revenue a month before we met in person.
Wow.
Yeah, we met with the, he reached out to me on a cold LinkedIn message 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's how our relationship started. So it's kind of crazy, these internet friends that you meet and how close you become without ever actually having seen them in person.
Yeah, that's actually interesting. I didn't know that you haven't met, well, you have met him now, but it's interesting that you built such a big, like not a big business, but like a good business, you know, already in such a short time with a person that you haven't met in person. It's strange.
Yeah. I mean, you know, similar time zones, similar interests, obviously. And then we met in Big Bear, California in October, maybe for the first time, but that was probably half of the business's lifespan. So It is interesting, you know, and it's one of the things that we've been reflecting on with the agency is remote. And this would be something I'd be interested to pick your brain about, but remote managing and the difficulties and the complexities that come about because of managing employees in a remote capacity. You know, you just like one of the things that you just don't know how long they're working. You don't know how much they're working. The only thing that you can judge them by sometimes, or at least for us, is the impact of their work and how substantial that feels on your business.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one. Although, you know, like when you do have a remote team, and for example, next week, I'm going to be flying to Atlanta to our offices down there. And I know that, for example, I go to Atlanta and I'm like, I'm staying at the office and I cannot stay there for a long time because I get so unproductive, actually, just because everyone is like feeling free, you know, to be interrupting you whenever they want to. Like you come in the morning, first of all, you're going to have coffee, chat, you know, then you're going to come and start doing something. But after an hour, you know, because there is a free snack in the fridge, you're going to go and grab this whatever coconut bar or whatever. Then after 1 hour, oh, it's like lunch break. Okay, I'm going to have lunch. Then after lunch, you become heavy and then you go back to work. And then it's five, you know, and everyone leaves. And for me, it's like, okay, I first work 8 hours, then I go and have a lunch. And then, you know, I take a nap and then I go and work for another 2 or 3 hours. So it's tricky in the office. I don't think that people can be, well, they can be obviously very effective, but they can be very effective working remotely. The biggest problem is communication. But that comes with any company that grows. Like you cannot, and you probably have experience, right, with Peter Lay.
Yeah, in that regard, it's a very like similar comparison between you going to Atlanta and me going to Germany. When I was working with, and I still work with Peter Lay, they're just a partner of the agency now, but when I was working full-time and only with Peer Lay, we were It was interesting because I would say, I think that a good way of summarizing this is that when I go into the office, I'm half as efficient and twice as fulfilled as when I'm working remote. Because like you're saying, right, you go into, when I'm home, when I was working just for Pure Lay, I would be, one of the cool things about working internal was I would be sitting there around, you know, noon, one, two, somewhere in that time frame. And I'd be saying, man, what should I focus on? Right? Like, what are the things that I should be where should I be putting my time, energy, and effort? And where is that best spent? And those kind of things. And then when I come up with things, right? Whether that's attribution or influencer marketing or whatever area that is. But my work, my day-to-day execution is completely finished. I'm 100% on top of that. When I would go into the office, it was a different story, right? I was building these relationships and communicating with people and exactly what you're saying, but it would be Friday and it'd be 4 p.m. or 5 p.m. And I'd be like, man, I still have 3, 4, 5 hours of executing to do. It might just be the personality of you and I, but certainly I lack in the time that I allocate to execution when I'm working in person. But then on the other side of that, when I'm working remote, I'm thinking, man, I didn't have the best conversation with this guy or my boss or my client or my co-founder. Is he angry at me?
You don't know, right?
You have no idea because you can't see them in person. You don't have that closure that is like, oh, he's laughing and joking and now we're all good. You're just sitting over here thousands of miles away wondering if everything's okay.
It's a very similar thing for us and what we are trying to do, like what we are trying to replicate our office environment with is with Marco Polo. There is this app. I don't know if it's widely used or not, but we use it and I like it a lot. Like it's a good for brainstorming and it's good for these kind of things. Like, hey, I think like, is everything okay? You know, how are you feeling today or whatever? Like small talk basically. And it's awesome. And we use it for that. Like I recommend you use it. The problem maybe with it could be that once you scale it up, you know, like to big teams, then it could become an issue because everyone would be like, instead of creating a task or making it more organized, they would say like, hey, do this or like whatever, you know, like, can you not forget this? And like, you usually forget if it's not a task, at least I do. So that's a problem.
Interesting. I've never used Marco Polo, but I just made a note of it. I'll have to look into it. Yeah, it's interesting the different tech stacks that agencies run off of versus internal brands. You know, like there's the common Slacks and Trello boards and, you know, Monday.com and those kind of things. But there's I feel like there's a whole new level of assistance that can be provided from Marco Polo or, you know, Gusto is a new one. I've never had to work on invoicing and those kind of things. But yeah, it's been interesting to see the tech stack transition.
I guess the big need will be for the integrators in the market, you know, like those who can help teams integrate work remotely, but not those who, like, I mean, at the high level, you know, like who have experienced it and who know how to do it. Because I know people who do it already, but it's not high level, you know, consulting that you can get yet, I think. But or not even consulting, but employees, like who know how to do it and who can, communication architects, that's how Chris calls them, you know. And if you have one, like it's perfect. Because today, actually, we launched a new product and there was some minor like change. There was a minor change in the launch strategy, and that communication somehow didn't end up being with the copywriter, right? And she's creating that like lots of copy for us. And when we launched it, it's successful. But we're looking at it, and it's like, did you not know that we changed this strategy or the messaging? And she didn't. And like these things, small things, get lost. When you're remotely, like working remotely, I don't think that they would be lost if you were working at the office, or maybe they would, I don't know, maybe same.
Potentially more than, that's an interesting term, communication architect. I like that. But potentially more than the importance of the architecture of your communication to me, and or equally important is the way that, like turnover, right? Like I think about the complexities and the variation of communication methods that I use, whether it's for content, creative briefs or content deliverables or copywriting, you know, budget restrictions and budget setting, all of these different areas that you communicate completely differently And like, while communication architects could streamline that communication within a company, I think that it's almost like, I think about turnover a lot when I think about this, right? It's like, how long are your employees working within your company? Because if your employees are around for a long time, for instance, myself, when I communicate with PureLay, there is no ball dropping anymore, right? Like there is, I've been working there for almost 3 years at this point. It's very obvious to me, and I have a very set up process that I've been working for a long time. And in turn, the rest of the company has been working with me for a long time in that process, that it's like set in stone. And I always know that it's going to come, and they always know that they need to give me that communication or that where to put in requests, those sorts of things. High turnover could kill that, right? Because then you, let's say that you leave a company or your agency is plugged into a company and then plugs out of that company. Now it's a whole new framework, and now it's a whole new set of architecture for that communication.
Yeah, exactly. And did internally it not change? Like, did it not change internally in PureLay? I mean, between you and maybe key people, you know, who are like looking after the performance, but I wonder, you know, between the rest of the team, because yeah, it has become a big business and has grown so much with so many employees. I think that the last time we spoke, like you said, that there were 200 people or something working there, which is crazy.
I think that last time we spoke, we were at 140. Right now, I believe the employee count's at 180, maybe a little bit more than that. It's crazy. There's new faces every day. Did the landscape of communication change? It's a good question. Yes, in certain ways more than others. I think that the hierarchical communication changed a lot. And what I mean by that is, like, we have implemented things that are in place to help prevent that sort of disconnect, especially for me. Like, we have implemented things that help to step in with that disconnect, because I was only able to go to Germany one time this year, which is crazy, because 2019, I was in Germany for almost 100 days, you know? So like, that is a huge, because of COVID, that is a huge pivot that we've had to take. And, you know, we follow, I believe I've talked about this here before, we follow a program called Scale Up, based off of a book that I'm looking at by Vern Harnish. And he has a lot of helpful advice for how to implement structure to a startup, right? So his idea is that you go from a startup to a scale up to whatever. And we're really truly fitting that scale up mentality. And so we have things like this. For instance, I have a monthly coaching call with the co-founder. And in this call, I have to fill out some information about my performance. And it's like a performance review, right? But so there's this more strict sort of hierarchical communication that comes not only from me to the people above me, but from me to the people below me or beside me, where we have implemented monthly, weekly, daily reviews and quick meetings and huddles and those kind of things to make sure that everyone's on the same page and that we're all aligned. Because as you've already pointed out, the bigger that the company gets, it can kind of be a needle in a haystack if you don't have those sort of things implemented.
Yeah, I actually gonna open up my notes, and because I read this book, like awesome book called The Hard Thing About Hard Things. Like, I recommend, highly recommend it to any entrepreneur who is scaling, especially their business. But it basically said that there are three problems in the scaling business. One of them is communication. Mm. The other one is decision making, and the other one I completely forgot. But I've seen, you know, these things play out in such a big way.
What was the second one that you referenced?
Decision making.
I see that one a lot now, actually. Pivoting to the agency side of business, one of the things that, you know, we've talked about a lot in the past is dark posts. And it's funny, you know, it's like when you start, we pitch this to all different sizes of companies, right? I probably pitch dark posting, I don't even know how many times a week, but I'm very well versed on the pitch. And however, it's kind of crazy, because one of the guys that we pitched this with brought this idea to me that we're going to have difficulty with companies getting siloed in their investment. And what I mean by this is, dark posting is essentially the marriage of paid social advertising with influencer marketing, right? So he was nervous that these companies are going to get siloed in their thought process and say, I don't know where to put this investment. Like, is this in the budget of influencer marketing, or is this in the budget of paid social advertising? And I was like, yeah, okay, but they're going to see the value in, you know, they'll have to see the value in the program if they understand the pitch and if we do a good job with our pitch. And then that siloed thought process, it's not going to stop them from investing, but I was wrong on that. It's crazy to watch. Some of these big brands will literally not make a decision, and so they will decide not to go with the program because they cannot figure out where to put the budget. And to me, that's just a foreign concept, right? If you see the, if the proof is in the pudding, right? If you see the, if you see the outcome and you understand the pitch, or maybe, you know, if we're doing a good job with the pitch, then they're going to understand, okay, it doesn't matter where we put this budget. What matters is that we put, you know, that we're able to put together these outcomes that they're speaking about and determine if this is a valid program for us or not, right? And so I think that decision-making has gotten extremely convoluted in their organization, which forces them to make no decision, which in turn leads to a bad decision, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I'm seeing it all over the place. Like, I mean, no decision is sometimes a better decision than a bad decision for me, but bad decisions can ruin the company. And like, you can see it in only in 6 months, you know, like at the point, like, let's say Pirelli, you know, if they make one bad decision, maybe it will not be seen right now, you know, like, let's say you make a decision on the Black Friday strategy. And if it's wrong, you know, like, it can affect the revenue, it can affect the how many people you're going to hire next year, it can affect you by the opportunities that you're going to miss because you will not have enough revenue maybe to buy new inventory or whatever, you know. So like, it's extremely important to be thinking about these decisions deeply and like from different points of view. And that's what I'm actually, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because probably I'm excited about it myself right now and I'm studying it and how different people are making these different decisions. Super interesting. And by the way, the third thing from that book, the hard things about hard things, communication, decision making, and common knowledge. So basically, how can you educate, I guess, people within the organization, how you got there, here, you know, what works, what doesn't work, and all of these things, because it's the same problems that we're having, at least we do.
Yeah, common knowledge, that's an interesting one. And also, not, you know, it's also difficult to know what is common knowledge within the agency, within the company, right? What are the things that we want to share with, who gets to know what, what's important for everyone to know, what's not important for everyone to know? Yeah, it's definitely, it's interesting. What was that book called? The Hard Thing About?
The Hard Thing About Hard Things.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's like about a struggling, you know, CEOs usually that they have to make super difficult decisions. And sometimes it's like choosing from bad to worse. And like, it just gave me lots of perspective, you know, how, where we are at right now as well, that you sometimes, like, sometimes I really cannot make any better decision. Like, I have to sometimes choose from a bad decision or even worse decision. And it seems that it's like a common thing, you know.
I know.
It made me feel better about my situation.
I know that just from our conversations, one of the things that you've been focusing a lot on lately is decision making, right? Like, I know that as, I think it's just a common, it's common practice that as you become a lot, if your business, as your business grows, if you're the leader of that business, the decisions that you make become more substantial and become more important and have more substantial impact, right or wrong, right? Like, I was just talking to my co-founder again today, and we were writing, we had a couple of proposals that were due today. And we were talking about how crazy the magnitude of these proposals has become. So I just would be, yeah, I'd just be curious to hear how is your, you know, as you've dove into this journey of making, of decision making and focus on making the right decisions and just the topic as a whole, how has your decision making process changed?
It hasn't changed that much so dramatically right now. It's just that I have a few mental models that I use to make decisions, and like, I don't use them every day, but I try to think of them every day. And for example, because I saw, you know, for example, how important it is to choose the right product to launch. Like, let's say that you choose a wrong product to launch. That means that my team has to work for 3 months preparing for that product launch. We launch it. And that means that, don't forget that it's not only the COGS, but remember that I'm paying my team for 3 months of their salary. That means that they, in the meantime, they cannot be working on anything else. So I'm taking away the time from them. And if the product is wrong, you know, like if the product is something that our customers don't want, then I have invested into the inventory. I have invested into 3 months of our labor cost. But at the same time, I invested into opportunity cost, meaning that like they couldn't work on anything else, like top of the funnel, maybe funnels or, you know, creatives or something else, or maybe another product launch. So that's when I understood, like, holy shit, like this is so important, you know, so I need to be working on it. So I started reading some books on it, and there are a few mental models that have already helped me tremendously. One is called inversion. So, and it says, I'll open it up as well on my laptop, but basically you state your goal. So let's say that my goal is to sell our business for $1 billion, right? Then you have to state what's the opposite of that goal. So the opposite of selling this business for $1 billion would be to go bankrupt. And then you ask yourself a question, how can I go bankrupt? And you make a list, you know, like, so I wrote down, for example, if like probably one product launch would not kill us, but let's say that we make wrong decisions on free product launches. That means that for 9 months, my team was out of work. I was paying them money. We didn't generate revenue. That probably would mean that we would go bankrupt. Then another thing, let's say that we make the last minute decisions that changes the whole strategy and we do it for two or three times in a row. Then I would lose my team because they would lose their morale, you know, and all of these things are another thing. Major PR disaster. Product, like we maybe, I don't know, by switching to branded marketing immediately instead of doing it gradually. So I listed like maybe 20 things like these. And when you have the list, you have the list of what exactly you cannot be doing, like what you have to avoid at all costs. So I shared it with my team and I said like, okay, let's make sure that we don't do these things. And it's really interesting. I'm asking, you know, each one of the department leads to be doing the same thing, like to be listing these things out. And we are coming up with great solutions, you know. For example, with influencer marketing, what we saw is that the shout out started not to work. And I'm not sure if you heard it, but like actually I spoke with Fares and he told me that like the algorithm changed in December for shout outs, like for organic shout outs. Basically, it started, Instagram started identifying the shoutouts and they would reduce the reach. So they would instead, they would want to know that you put money behind your whitelisted accounts, and that's where you come into play. But yeah, like it stopped working, you know. So I started identifying the gaps in the team, and basically I asked them to do the same, and we identified, you know, what we shouldn't be doing. So we shouldn't be investing too much money right now into regular shoutouts. We should be investing far more money into whitelisting accounts. Anyway, it's a good exercise, and I highly recommend it to anyone.
It's an interesting, just touching on the organic posting side of things. It's such an interesting thing that I've been reflecting on over the last couple of weeks, especially, you know, with iOS 14. As marketers, like I actually, I had a conversation with the director of growth of a D2C company the other day, and she said, as marketers, we're called to be surgeons, not doctors. And I think that's really interesting because we're in charge of the tools at our disposal, right? And we're not in control of the tools at our disposal. But that's not what a surgeon does, right? A surgeon's not diagnosing. A surgeon's just working with what he's been told, with what he or she's been given, the tools at his disposal, and trying to make the most out of the most impact out of his actions. And that's very much how I've felt, as opposed to a doctor who's in charge of the horizon of the patient. Like that's very much how I've felt over the last couple of weeks when I've been diving into these iOS updates or these organic, I heard about this algorithm update as well with organic posting. You know, that's, I very much felt like a surgeon, not a doctor, where it's like, okay, these changes are coming, right? We are in charge as marketers, as leaders of organizations, you know, as CEOs, as founders, as whatever you want to call us. We're in charge of making the most out of these changes. Be greedy when others are fearful and figure out where the opportunity comes from. Not sit here and say, you know, we can't bitch and moan. We don't have, it doesn't help us at all to complain or whatever. Cry out for help. What helps us is how, these are the changes. What are we going to do to pivot? So I guess that's a big question for you. I'm sure a lot of people are interested in, you know, with that change with organic, I know that's a part of your play, but with an even larger change in iOS 14, what's your plan? How are you going to adapt and how do you see this playing out?
To be honest, like right now, I'm seeing everyone just sharing their opinions. And like, to be honest, like, I don't think that anyone has an answer. Like none of the Facebook reps, no one, you know, like I can be pretending as much as I want to that I'm like, yeah, it's consolidate the account, you know, whatever. And I see lots of gurus doing that. And I hate it, man. Like we share the same no hate for the same thing. But I'm like, just like, guys, like you are just guessing, you know, like it's like making assumptions in the dark that there's going to be light, you know, like at some point, but there is like,
yeah,
it's going to happen. And what we're going to do, like, I'm going to jump on the call with you. I'm going to jump on the call with Fares. I'm going to jump on the call with Yuri and others, you know, that are spending big money on ads. And it's, yeah, like, okay, so what do you see that's working? Maybe let's try this. Let's try to have you try this, you know, like, okay. But right now we cannot do much. I can give you common sense like stuff, but like it won't help too.
Right. I think that the real answer that people should be, yeah, but here's what people like what you're saying exactly with gurus and bullshitters. What they're telling you is they're telling you all of these things that they're gonna do right now. That, you know, I love your answer because I think that what we're actually going to do is we're just gonna fucking figure it out. Like,
exactly. I see a massive opportunity down here. I really see, like, imagine if we figure it out. Like, we would be the only ones who figure it out, you know? So this is like a massive opportunity ahead of us. Like, how can we make it? How can we figure it out before anyone else does? Like,
it's also like, I think that if you're one of the gurus right now that's preaching a bunch of false bullshit to your clients, right? If you're coming to your clients and you're saying, look, man, we know that iOS is coming, but we're going to do this, this, and this, and then it's not going to affect us. We're going to be fine. Like, it's not going to have an impact on us. You're going to be fucked. Like, they're going to come to you once iOS happens and once we see the implications of that change on the platform, and they're going to say, you said that everything was going to be okay, right? Like, you swore up and down that you had a solution here. Versus, I think what I hope your and my approach is to it is, you know what? This is going to affect us. This is something that's concerning to us. But Cambridge Analytica happened in 2017, and we figured that out, right? Like, we are agile, we are flexible, we move fast, we work hard. People have made money in e-commerce before Facebook, and people are going to make money after Facebook. And I think that's a little bit dramatic because I know that there's still going to be a place in the market for obviously paid social. But I think that there's just in all, there's just so much value to being objective and honest and not having like this incessant need to always come from authority when you don't know what's going on, you know?
Yeah, that's where lots of people, well, you know, like what's good for them later on, like, and I've seen, you know, many, even Gary Vaynerchuk, I saw him like make predictions, you know, like, oh, in 5 years, this is going to happen. Like, but 95% of the things don't happen, but 5% of the things happen. And everyone says like, I told you so. I was the one who was right. But it doesn't matter that he was missing, you know, 95% of the time.
Yeah, right. They cherry pick their predictions and then look like geniuses.
Yeah. Like, you know what I'm going to do? Like, actually, this weekend I did it. I basically opened up all of my windows. I started meditating and I took a micro dose of mushrooms and I was problem solving. And it was I thought that it was the craziest idea how I look like because my windows are looking to the street, you know, and they are massive. So they can see this one gringo in Mexico, you know, sitting on like with his windows opened in meditation pose. And then I would move my hands, you know, in front of me, like seeing the problems and then connecting them with solutions. That was a crazy experience.
A weird comparison that I'm going to bring here, but there's something valuable. Like there's two types of people, right? And I think that there's when someone's presented with a challenge that's so large that they have no idea to overcome it, how to overcome it, and they're just getting started. I think there's two types of people. There's people who shy away from that challenge, and then there's people who sit in their house in Mexico with the windows open, microdosing LSD, and they sit there and they think, right? And then they get to work, and they're not intimidated by this, you know, whatever, right? This change, whatever change we're talking about in 6 months might be, right? They're not intimidated by that change. They're not cowed by that change. They're sitting there. They think, they gather themselves, and they act. And actually, it goes back to like we just recently hired a couple of engineer graduates that have no experience in marketing, and I told you about this. And one of the things that I've been absolutely fascinated by their ability to do is these two guys just got into e-commerce in, I would say, mid-October. And I mean, they're jumping into an agency that's spending, you know, we're strapped. We have a lot of work on our plate. We have big budgets that a lot of people have never spent before. And, you know, we're in charge of the direction of these companies, you know, future. And similarly, in that comparison, it's amazing how much they have been able to just lean into the work. And like they're young guys, they're not, you know, skilled executors at this time. But it was amazing to watch them, you know, in a metaphorical sense, sit back. I don't think they're taking LSD, but sit back, take their LSD and sit there and think and then act.
Yeah, I've seen that. We spoke, you know, then I understood that, oh, that's why the guy that I hired, you know, is so good as well, because he's an engineer. And like I started understanding how their brain works. And for them, it's natural to be solving problems and not easy problems, like very complex problems where you have to think about everything. Like imagine if they were supposed to be building buildings, like how many things would they have to be considering, like the ground, the turf, you know, I don't know, like how will this look like, which material will we be using, how many windows there would have to be, I don't know, you know, like emergency exits, like how many things do they have to think about in order to be doing that. And yes, like we came to the conclusion like a few months ago already that engineers are the best media buyers.
I think so. Well, and you know, yeah, I think so as well. And there's benefits and weaknesses to every kind of media buyer, but I think that there's a certain skill set that engineers provide that is very different than your average, your average marketer.
Yeah. Like, I mean, what I do see is that they need to have a holding hand, like from a marketing and creative perspective.
That's it. Yeah.
But from the, like all of the data gathering and solving problems, like maybe testing more efficiently and all of these things, like all of these problems, they can be solving it much better than my brain can. I can, for example, I can be like solving problems at a maybe strategical point of view, not alone, usually like with your help or someone else's help, you know, like ideas and then putting them into one big picture while they can be crushing it at the micro level on the channel. And like, especially with media buying, that's the most fascinating thing, what kind of Excel sheets they're building for us as well and how they calculate things. I'm like, wow, I would have never thought about it, you know.
Exactly. To my engineer employees, I love you. I don't mean any offense by this, but they are the greatest media buyers and the worst copywriters, right? But I think that points out a larger underlying principle that has just, it's a principle that was brought to me the first time by the co-founder Etienne at Purelay. He said, you know, he believes that what brings them forward is leveraging the right people with the proper technology. And I've said that before, but as I re-enter into the agency world and see a lot more entrepreneurs and business owners and people who are trying to build their brands, it's drilled into my head at this point that we have so many entrepreneurs that I look at and either they're falling short with their brands and they're not hitting their growth goals, or they are succeeding and exceeding their growth goals. And the biggest difference and the biggest underlying truth that I found in all of that is either they understand how to leverage the right people with the proper technology or they don't. It's to me the just number one catalyst or inhibitor of growth.
What do you mean by technology? Like technology as in media buying team, or what would you define it?
Well, I mean, technology is, I think that you take the proper person, right? So as we just said, engineers are amazing media buyers, but terrible copywriters. So you take engineering minded person and you put them in front of Excel, or you put them in front of Facebook, or you put them in front of, a complex problem that is systems related and requires a technical mind. And you watch them work and you feel the output in your organization and you feel that, you know, you feel the quality of the job that they're doing. Versus you take that same person and you put him in front of an Instagram post that he needs to create and you watch him freak out, right? And you watch him have no idea how to leverage this piece of technology. I guess piece of technology is more, you know, tool, right? And you watch the stark contrast and the difference of the outcome. And then you take that principle and you replicate it across your hiring process in HR and across your building strategies as a company. And I think that the best companies take the right people and put them and give them the proper tools to execute, and the worst companies take the wrong people and put them in front of tools that they don't understand how to use and don't have the soft skills to succeed with. And the outcome is tremendous.
Yeah, I've seen this, like I've done this mistake myself, like for so long. And I only now realize, like with engineers, like you, with engineers or anyone, you know, who was buying media for us, I would just be hiring people who are like me or like who are salesy, you know how to, like who are entrepreneurs, like, I don't know. Yeah, entrepreneurs, I would identify them like that. And I would hire them and I would teach my own methods, you know, but I was never strong at media. Like I was never super strong at media buying, or I was never strong at numbers, but I was still in charge of it. And I was hiring people who were like me, you know, and it was so dumb to do that because I should have done it like differently. Obviously, I didn't know what I didn't know, you know, like that's why our conversations are always super valuable. Like you shared, you know, that, oh, we have engineers and they work really well on media buying. And I'm like, that's why this guy is working out so well with us. You know, like he's an engineer, like they come from this kind of a background. And so we need to start identifying, you know, what kind of people, what kind of skill set or what kind of a background or different mindsets or skill sets that have to come into these new industries that we're not like developing, but like new kind of roles that have to be re-engineered. And we need to find similar professions that were working on something similar and put them into the right place. Like I'm talking, for example, about influencer marketing. Like we spoke about it maybe last or 2 weeks ago. Like who would we need, you know, to be in charge of influencer marketing? And it's like a salesperson, like some kind of a salesperson that would have to deal with lots of high-end clients. Like, as I said, like I had this friend that was selling, renting airplanes, you know, for these celebrities or football teams and so on. Like this is the kind of like very, very good match, you know?
Yeah.
And I was never thinking about it this way, but it all comes down, you know, like with experience, you only get it through experience.
Yeah. I mean, it's Albert Einstein quote, the only source of knowledge is experience. It's the same. I mean, I used to think when I was super young and like couldn't, you know, like I think I was in college and I was struggling to find an internship that I was interested in. And I was like, man, I will work so much harder than anybody else. And I've got, you know, I can show that through my grades, and I've been putting all this time and energy, and I swear I'll be the first person in and the last person out. How come I can't find an internship? Right. And it's because I had no experience. It's because if you have and we've talked about this a million times, right? You get the right conversation. You get the right person in the room with you and you have a conversation and they can share their experience. And it's the fastest, it's the item in my career that has progressed me the quickest is having a conversation with the right person who has experience that I lack. And it gives me a better idea how to execute on something. And then I execute on that thing. And then I get the experience, and now I have a newfound, you know, and then I'm adding value, right? It's just like a continual building block onto what I hope to develop as a vast network of experience.
Yeah. And it's a difficult one for at our stage, I think, like, because I'm finding less and less people who are at our level or who are at a higher level who I could learn from, like I would want to learn from. There are these people, but I cannot find a lot of them.
Well, relevant experience is also very difficult. You know, like we've been starting to be introduced to companies that have, like, for instance, people that work at big companies or venture backed companies. And these people have all of this experience in a realm that is completely foreign to me. You know, a company acting with venture capital it's insane to me how different that company is than someone who's than an e-commerce brand who's bootstrapped. And, you know, you talk about them and you learn that they're in e-commerce and you learn that they've put, you know, that they've had this much growth in their business over the last couple of years and you're super impressed. And then you start digging into the numbers of what they're doing. And you're like, if my company acted like that, they'd be out of business, right? Like I can't act like that.
Yeah.
Do you work with any venture backed companies at Sugaton?
We are working with one, and to be honest, like, it's a very, I'm not involved with them as much, but what I'm seeing is that the decision making is way too slow, because they have to, I don't know how it works, like, very well, but I know that we needed to do like we needed to install like an afterpay or something like that, and then like 2 months in, no answer, you know, because like the person who had to make a decision, he didn't know about it, you know, so it probably was like, okay, I'm gonna figure it out maybe after a week, you know, and then he never did, you know, and we never installed it. So just an example, but there were quite a few of these during the time that we were working with them.
I have like a visceral reaction when I, or just, I run the other way as quickly as possible when I see red tape. It's like ingrained into an entrepreneur or an e-commerce, like ourselves who've worked with these, or who've worked with bootstrap companies, because if you need Afterpay, you just go get Afterpay, right? Like that's, it's a weak project, and then you have Afterpay, and then you make the play, you execute as quickly as possible. I know for yourself, that's a big deal. And you observe the outcome and you analyze it, and then you figure out, was that a good move or was that a bad move? As opposed to like, I don't know, you have to go get the board's approval, or I also don't know how those companies work, but it's quite terrifying when you think about speed.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, like I think in the past 5 years or whatever, there were so many companies that were bootstrapped, but I guess it's usually not the case.
Right.
It's my assumption. I don't know. Like I haven't been in this business for too long, only 3.5 years, but it seems that what we are doing is unique.
Yeah.
From what I'm hearing.
So I did have a question that I wanted to ask you on here. I actually remembered, it's crazy how long we've been friends at this point. I remembered your year review from last year when you posted it this year. I remembered that exercise because I did the exercise both years. And it's super impactful, and it's a great exercise. I guess my question is, you know, coming, it's January 8th, right? So we both had a lot of time to, well, first off, breathe and eat and sleep after Q4, but also look back and reflect on how our Q4 stacked up in comparison to what we were hoping for. And I would be just curious, where have you lied on that mark since you've come out of the execution and out of the nitty gritty details and gone into like, you know, analysis and review?
So that's like talking about Q4, I was extremely disappointed with myself. I made so many bad decisions, or not so many bad decisions. And that's the thing, they did not like completely rely on me, but I made quite a few bad decisions. That's why, I don't know if you have listened to our last two podcast episodes, but I started to prepare for Black Friday now. Like I'm collecting, like I'm speaking to as many entrepreneurs who have done really well in Black Friday, and like quarter four in general, to make sure that I don't make the same stupid mistakes that I made this year. And like, don't get me wrong, like we did really, like, I mean, we did well. With one brand, we generated 10 million, you know, in November alone. And it's like awesome, you know, but not with every client. And that's what I'm disappointed the most. Like, why did these, like we were preparing with these guys and these, it was clear that their strategy was superior. Why didn't we replicate it to others? But that's why I wanted to have this podcast episode with you, because you had an amazing, you actually were the one who was telling me like, no, actually, like when I shared with you the Black Friday numbers, and it was like 400K with one brand and another brand, like around also 500K or 600K. And you said like, dude, it's not much. I was like, really? Could I have done more? And like, dude, we're planning to do like 4 million today. I'm like, what? Like, yeah, I must be doing something wrong. So I started reading your notes from the last year, because you did a great post in our group about last year's Black Friday. I was like, oh, wow, I missed actually a lot. But then I started thinking like, okay, like there are so many more aspects that I probably missed, and probably you are missing too. And like I spoke with a few guys from emails, and they told me like awesome, you know, strategies. Then a few other guys were from a Facebook agency too, and they showed me how to optimize things, you know, before Black Friday that would reduce the CPMs and so on. I was like, oh, wow, like I need to be focusing on that a lot more. You know, I kind of let myself a bit off the hook, and like I hoped that my teams will figure it out, but it's a complex problem, you know, and I know that only you cannot figure it out yourself. You need to be gathering as much information as possible from many different sources until you have like a perfect, not a perfect, but I mean, like you maximize the growth in quarter four, which you did, you know. So I'm actually going to return the question to you. How did you do in quarter four? Were you satisfied with your results? And what was your overall strategy if you were satisfied with it? Or if you weren't, what mistakes did you make?
That's a great question. To be honest with you, like 50% is my satisfaction rate with Q4. I think that this year, more than others, this year was somewhat of a mixed bag of results. And I'll put a disclaimer there. The brands who, again, going back to the same topic, the brands who leveraged the right people with the proper technology, the brands who analyzed data throughout the year, the brands who did the right things, the brands who understand what variables leverage growth for them the quickest, what provides them the largest catalyst for their growth, where they need to put attention, time, and energy. And then additionally, on top of that, and more important than anything, executed perfectly, those brands had record-breaking Black Fridays. With Pure Lay, we had so much revenue coming in on Black Friday that we had to, that Shopify had to install a line in our checkout because otherwise it would slow down the website. Even though we just had our website rebuilt and I project managed it, and it is a state-of-the-art website that has like a 1.5 second load time and is really done, in my opinion, to a high level. We had to put a checkout lag essentially in. They put it in, Shopify did. And they said that they only do that for about 100 stores in the entire year. So this is a perfect example of a brand that looked, that did all of those things and executed perfectly. Now, however, still shot under our goal, to be honest. So, you know, I think that all of this points towards the fact that e-commerce, paid social, this landscape and this industry that we're in is getting more and more competitive as we continue to grow in it. And it begs the, you know, requires the marketers like yourself and me to do exactly what you're doing all the time, which is what I love so much about your approach just to e-commerce in general, which is develop a community and then put together a roster of marketers that you either that inspire you or that you inspire that or whatever, right? Develop a community and hound that community, because everyone has different things that they do that drive growth for their brands, if they're worth anything in this game. And those things, what I've learned, those things are you can replicate them across different niches, across different geographical locations, across different, whatever it might be, whether it's lead gen or e-com, those practices are, you can replicate them. So, and we learned this by entering back into the industry or the agency realm. And what I learned even more so is on the opposite side of that, the brands that failed on Black Friday and didn't have as good of a Black Friday as they were hoping to and didn't move that needle, some of them were too young to be able to analyze the data, right? We have some young brands that have seen some tremendous growth that have no way of analyzing the data from 2019, for example. But the other ones that are mature brands that have high goals and revenue expectations, they failed to approach Q4 with the integrity and the respect that Q4 deserves, as like I'm putting it up on a pedestal, but it is that important nowadays. And, you know, you felt that, like everybody feels that nervous energy leading into Black Friday and heading into October, and then Amazon Deal Day happens and we hit November, and then the anticipation grows. And then the brands that didn't analyze the data, leverage people and technology, execute perfectly. The brands that thought, oh, we found growth in the past, right? We know what we're doing. We know how to grow this business better than anybody. We're experts in this e-commerce game. The brands that entered in like that had extremely disappointing Black Fridays and didn't hit the growth goals that they were expecting. So it was a mixed bag. Like I don't want to project to people that like we won across the board, but we did have some great wins with brands and the strategies that we're still analyzing the data, but the strategies that were deployed were extremely effective for them.
That's exactly, you described me, you know, like I was too arrogant going into Black Friday, because the previous year we crushed it, you know, like we were so good at it. And I was like, okay, we're just going to use the same things that worked, you know, last year with minor tweaks, you know. And what happened is that, like, I failed to innovate. I failed to be critical of myself, to be asking people, like, what am I missing? What am I doing wrong? Like, can you identify the gaps or what's your strategy? And I would ask, like, people, what's your strategy overall, you know, but I would never go into detail, so it would be just lost somewhere in the translation. And next year, I'm flying to you in July just to understand how you're going to approach, you know, Black Friday and how you're going to think about it as well. Like, because you had some amazing things like a secret box, like a secret gift box, and people were going crazy about it. And like all of these things, you know, and how important it was, like, for me to be doing this year. Obviously we had problems with the October, at least in the US, like US market, when the CPMs have gone so much up. So we were just extinguishing the fires, like after fires, you know, like our revenues would drop. We would need to come up with an offer quickly. And it was just a crazy, but I'm still like super harsh on myself. So I'm making sure that I'm as prepared as possible for the next Black Friday.
I was going to say, if you did 10 million in the brand in November, I don't know. I think you're being A, too hard on yourself. And B, you're one of the most inquisitive marketers that I know of. So like you're always, I mean, and likewise, you know, I know that we have a lot to learn from each other. So we're always back and forth and in the group. And I see you, you know, requesting that knowledge that you know that your followers, friends, colleagues have. Two pointers. For just people listening, and then on that in general, what I'm doing to prepare for November right now, like preparation for November to me means that right now we're testing. In February, we're testing. In March, we're putting our whole mind, energy, heart into the tests that we're running and working in these time periods. Leading over the course of the next 11 months or 10 months, however much we have, to figure out what moves the needle, double down on that, triple down on that, and figure out if that's a principle that we can apply to Black Friday. So that's to me, and I forgot the other one that I was going to say, but that's to me, I think that the people who think that they have the game figured out and come Black Friday next year, their strategy is the same strategy as Black Friday this year, you're fucked. You're going to have a disappointing Black Friday again, and then again, and then again, and then you're going to sit here and you're going to blame your agency, or you're going to blame your content, or you're going to whatever. You're going to struggle and fail to see that you're not using the regular season to figure out what works for your brand in the playoffs, right? So that's one, is prepping for Black Friday is not just having meetings around what are we going to do for Black Friday. Prepping for Black Friday is these surprise boxes, these advent calendars. It's these split tests that you're running to see what most quickly moves the needle and how can that be applied towards Black Friday. That's my first thing. My second thing is actually based off of another post that I wrote in your group. That is, if you are reliant on Facebook, and I think I was a little bit, one criticism that you gave me that I took to heart is I think I was a little bit too polarized here. But if you're reliant on Facebook to build your brand throughout 2021, you're not going, in my opinion, you're not going to have an effective brand in Black Friday in Q4 of 2021. It's putting in the time, energy, and effort outside of the ads manager and into building that fire of a brand so that once you dump the gasoline of paid social on top of it, you have the maximum result possible and achievable come activation time.
Yeah. Like the criticism, the reason why I gave you some criticism behind it, like about it, was because with the brand that we did, you know, 10 million in November, they have a super strong brand. And it's only recently they started doing email marketing. Imagine that. Only recently.
Wow.
They did almost 50 mil.
Really?
They did 50 mil last year. But they have a super strong brand. They have a super strong brand, recognizable.
And they just recently started doing email marketing?
Summertime. Like, I mean, proper email marketing. They would do campaigns. They didn't have any flows before that.
What the hell?
Yeah, it was a struggle. Like, it was it was a struggle for 2.5 years. I was trying to convince that let's have something set up for now, at least like until you come up with the like amazing templates or whatever, you know. But yeah, that's a true story. I think they maybe June, around June time, they started implementing it. And I'm not sure how far are they in implementing everything, but imagine that. Facebook, only Facebook.
And that's the big thing that always gives me so much confidence when we have these ambitious growth goals with companies like all of the companies that I manage, right? Purely's goal is to double as a company every year. And that sometimes if you think about that for too long, it's you get this feeling of like, wow, eventually that's going to be really, really hard, right? And there's a guy who was on Joe Rogan a couple of months ago, and I was listening to his podcast, and this guy carries around a coin. He carries around a coin or a dollar bill, or it's a piece of currency that's no longer in production. And the reason that he carries this in his wallet is because the person who was listed on the cover of the currency is either a Jewish man or a black man. And whoever he was a slave owner at the time. And this is like an old piece of currency, right? So it's his big reminder to himself of like, what are we doing that to, right? Like, what's the glaring thing in our generation, in our world, that we're sitting here, you know, saying how dare they did that 50 years ago, but we're sitting here doing the same thing right now. And I think that's like that brand not doing email marketing and being able to obtain $50 million of revenue. It blows my mind. And it makes me wonder, if anybody's got an answer here, please reach out to me. It makes me wonder, what's the big thing that we're not doing that is that glaring thing that we're saying, yeah, we're doing everything possible in e-commerce to drive revenue. Bullshit, right? There's something glaring that we're not doing that someone either has or hasn't figured out yet that I just need to talk to that correct person or read that proper book or whatever it is and figure out that glaring gap of knowledge and execution that we are missing that will help us hit those growth goals of leveraging, you know, 2x to 100% growth a year.
That's another great question. That's in the book, in the Hard Things About Hard Things. This is exactly the question that the CEO was asking his team members, like, what's the thing that we are not actually doing? Because like you can get bogged down, you know, like, oh, so what did you do last week? You know, well, how did it perform? Like, what was your objective last week? Did you achieve it? But he said, like, no one was asking, like, what are we not doing actually that we should be doing? And maybe it is obvious, you know, maybe it is not obvious. And for me, for this year, for example, actually, I have this one question and we chatted many times and we said, like, okay, so what does it take to actually take a company to 1 million? Because you're trying to take Purely to 100 million, sir, not 1 million, 100 mil. And I'm taking this other company to 100 million. So, and we always chat about it. And we say, like, okay, three things probably. Facebook, influencers, whitelisted accounts, product launches. This is the formula as well. This is the formula that this other brand did. So, we're at the exact same growth rate we are with Purely as well. Like we hit exactly the same revenues last year and very close this year. So we're on the same boat. So that's what fascinates me with our relationship, you know, because we have brands at the same level that are solving problems at the same level too. But what do you think is the growth factor to 100 mil?
That's hard, man. I know that's always... For a while, I thought that it was a different tool. For a while, I thought it was a different piece of technology, right? I thought that there was something that I'm not doing, TikTok, Snapchat, whatever that next, you know, shiny piece of technology is that we can leverage to make money from an advertising standpoint. But I think, and this might be foolish, it's just speculation, but I think that formula, paid social, Facebook, dark posting, influencers, I think that formula, unless I'm, you know, and when I figure it out, I'll tell you, but I think that formula right now is just amplified. It's just grows in magnitude, right? If you're doing dark posts with influencers with 10, with 2 million followers, do them with 10. If you're doing with 10, do them with 20, right? These brands are growing. Like if you watch, look at the growth of, for example, one of the brands that I think is harnessing this the most is Kylie Cosmetics. That is what you and I are doing with the brand that you're referencing and the brands that I'm referencing. That's it done times 10. And I don't think that it done times 10 multiplies revenue by 10, but it grows revenue to that. I am not currently in search of a new piece of technology and not necessarily a new strategy at this point to bring me to 100 mil. I think it's more so amplifying that current strategy and that current marketing mix by doubling it across into different markets, into different category, whatever it might be, in the new product launches, figuring out what the most effective product that we can launch is, right? Like one of my big questions leading into the agency was, is this strategy of Facebook, of dark posts and of influencers, is it something that we can take and replicate across different brands? And we took, for example, we took another one of the brands that we manage, and they were doing $60,000 of revenue in April of 2020. And we implemented nothing different than those three principles. And they did just shy of 10 million last year. And so my answer is, I think it's just magnifying. I think it's just 10Xing. I think it's just Grant Cardone, good old fashioned Grant Cardone style 10Xing of what we're currently doing. But it's the right, it's doing it when your homework and all your bases are covered and your analytics and your predictive modeling and all of this is done at the highest level so that you can make sure that your investment is not burning cash, right? So that your investment is moving in the right direction to move that needle into the $100 million range.
How did your journey with data analysis and all of these things that we spoke probably 6 months ago or so, how is this journey going for you?
Good question.
Did you become less stupid at it?
Less stupid, yeah, but not less stupid enough. So I think that the journey has been continued to, you know, it's gone in the different directions. It's continued to evolve. What we focus on now is very different than what we used to focus on. You know, what we focus now is well, and something that's interesting maybe for your followers as well, it's different per market for us with PureLay, and it's different per business with us with the agency. I think that there's like, you can have like death by analysis or paralysis. What is the phrase that people always
analysis paralysis.
That's it. Analysis paralysis. Like, I think that what we kind of went into new markets with was that strategy where we were trying to attribution, for example, we were trying to make this attribution journey applicable and plug and play per market. And then we learned, we were like, why are we doing this? We've grown to this level extremely profitably with PureLay Germany. Why would we enter any other market differently? So we enter every other market similarly to how we entered PureLay in Germany, which is with very little, very limited understanding of, or not understanding, but very limited practice and application of attribution. UTM, we use UTM tags, but we analyze them much less. You know, these kind of things, like if we just learned that when you're at a certain level and when you're at a lower level, it's not that necessary to put, that's not where your time, energy, and effort should be spent. Now with PureLay, we are not, I know that you're using, for example, I know that you're using Rockerbox or that you're using Heroes. Is it Rockerbox or Heroes that you're using?
Rockerbox.
I'd be curious to hear about your experience there. But with PureLay, we're still using, I am really pleased and we're still using good old fashioned UTM tags with Google Analytics. We've tweaked and played with our attribution model more. But I think that that is the strategy that we've learned is effective at this time for us. And I don't see the necessity for an investment in another piece of tech. The other thing that we've done is doubled down on data engineers and data analysts. So that team has grown, and that team is essentially just they're amazing. But like essentially, I just come to them with any like inquisitive any question that I've got. Right, like what is the LTV of a customer who bought this product first, and then they'll come back to me with the answer. You know, like I think that we're getting smarter. The big 2021 or 2020 second half of the year journey was we're getting smarter about what questions to ask our data specialists, and we're getting more precise with our attribution models and those sorts of things.
Yeah, it's not you won't, like, I assume that you cannot get like super accurate with all of it, but you can definitely, that's a good thing that you're mentioning, is that you need to know what questions to ask. Because if you know, like, someone can get you an answer because you can hire someone to get you an answer. But if you don't know what to ask, that's a problem. That's going to be a problem. And that's why, like, talking to you or someone else and reading books and acquiring all of this knowledge, you know, insights is so invaluable, and you have to be preparing for it every day. Basically, you have to be preparing for the playoffs, as you say, in quarter four, you know, to be as prepared as possible. And that's when you will either shine or you'll go into the not Hall of Fame. What could be the opposite of the Hall of Fame?
The opposite of the Hall of Fame. That's like the you go to the minor leagues.
Yeah, you go to the minor leagues if you don't perform at quarter four.
Yeah, and you know, another big one, like, I think it's, you always say it best, like, you don't know what you don't know. But I think the other, like, thing that always amazes me is that people come in, for example, people, like, halfway through last year, we brought in a new head of influencer at PureLane. And she came in and she said, how are dark posts going? And I was like, they've just, the effectiveness and performance has gone down. And, you know, it's not, we've been executing on these for so long, and they've been really effective for us. And so we're just going to change up the content. And, you know, we've been doing this a lot with stories. So we're going to move into other, you know, all placements and other categories and those kind of, and she was like, hold on. When was the last time that you guys did, like, what's the split between influencers that you used before and influencers that that are new to the brand? And I was like, let me look through it. The split was like 90% used influencers to 10% new influencers. And she was like, you're hitting a ceiling. Why don't you just try new influencers? And, you know, so it's not just continuing to ask questions, but I think it's also what you do such a good job of, which is asking people asking people questions and trying to figure out this inversion, you know, strategy where it's like, okay, what does it look like if I ask them the wrong questions, and what am I not asking them?
Yeah. That's a very interesting as well thing to mention here, is that, like, for some people, it can be just obvious, you know, like, you can be doing something and it's like you are doing it all the time, and someone could come to you and say, like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
And you would be like, oh yeah, that's right. Like, why am I doing this to, like this? And it's so, yeah, it's, I'm just amazed how stupid I am, you know, every day.
And it's the most toxic thing that I do all the time within my little safe, cozy house, right? And that translates to, like, my, you know, is complacency, right? The most dangerous question, or the most dangerous comment that you can make in a startup is, we've always done it that way. That's why we do it, right? And it's like, what the fuck are you talking about, man? That's not a justification for doing something. And I do it all the time. And I say that, I have to say it to myself, like, why did you just do that? And then I'm like, well, that's how I've always done it. And it's like, why is that a justification for why I'm doing it again?
Yeah. Especially if it's a wrong decision or wrong way of.
Yeah. But you don't know, right? You don't know what you don't know. So you don't know, you know, it takes a lot of times. It takes an outside of the box person or somebody different than you talk to all the time to uncover that, right?
And that's super important to be building a network of people who are not only, you know, like, giving you the same thing, like, who are agreeing with you and saying that, yes, you're doing it the way I do it. Like, you're right. Now you actually have to seek the disagreement and ask, like, okay, show me where I'm wrong and show me how you.
That's why the gurus are never insightful. And right, because it's like this. I don't know if I've ever said this to you before or on here before. It's like a rapper, right? If you watch rappers like Eminem, Logic, I don't know if you're a rap fan, but some of my favorite rappers, they're underground, right? And they're grungy, and they're hustlers, and they're working really hard, and then they get famous, and then what happens? Their music starts to suck, right? Because they get around all of these people who are like, oh my God, you're so smart. Yes, sir. Yes, man. Like, you're brilliant. Your music. I love this music. Whereas before that happens, before they're famous, before they're wealthy, before they're whatever, they're around a bunch of people who give them their honest opinion, right? They're like, I don't know. That music's not hitting it for me, right? It's not good. I don't enjoy that. This is something that you have to put more time, energy, and effort here. And I think that the gurus seek this yes man mentality out of all of their followers, and therefore surround themselves with people who are not too afraid to, but also want to ride their wave and won't tell them that what they're doing is harmful for the brands that they're managing. and therefore they lose their insight, they lose their edge, and they forget about how they got to the, you know, to such a positive place in the first spot.
And that's what I gonna end up the episode with, I guess, like seek discomfort, seek people who are disagreeing with you, because otherwise you're gonna end up like me, making 10 mil with one brand and then being disappointing, creating a disappointing performance for the rest of the brands that I was working with. It wasn't bad.
It's a conflict brings clarity.
Yes. And another thing, you know, John, like I understood that it could be of a massive value. We need to do a mastermind in July to finalize like Black Friday, you know, masterminds, bring in the smartest people in this industry to cross-check our thinking, to cross-check, to make sure that we don't leave any gaps in our quarter four, you know, and so we make sure that we don't have like 50% satisfying results. We end up being like 150% satisfied.
I would love to be a part of that. I would love to help put it on. I think there's a really nice little city in the south of Mexico that would make for an ideal location for a mastermind like that.
With enough brainstorming tools.
That's, I have no doubt in my mind of that.
Good way of putting it, actually. I love this. Brainstorming. Brainstorming exercises.
Brainstorming tools and brainstorming exercises. It was awesome talking to you today, David. I always enjoy these conversations, and I can't wait till my Sugatan podcast features gets into the double digits, just like...
We'll have to create one together where we interview maybe Chris or Fares or one of the people who are crushing it here too.
I want to speak for the entire Sugatan. I'm not convinced that Chris exists yet. I need proof that Chris is real.
She loves to be out of the light spot, you know. Although she will post some posts with Paris Hilton, which are crazy.
Well, I can't wait.
Like, you know, she doesn't hang out with me. I'm too low of a class now, Paris.
Okay. Relationship hour then.
Yes. Awesome. John, where can people find you?
Yeah, new to me. You can find me at voltagency.co. You can find me on LinkedIn, and you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, wherever. And then additionally, if you're interested in any of the projects that I'm working on, please don't hesitate to reach out. As we've said, I think a million times on this podcast, it's always what brings me forward as a professional and as a leader. So I'm happy to network and you know, talk to anybody who would be interested to hear what I have to say.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, as well, John, another thing that you are doing freely is like sharing like very... like openly share all of the insights, you know, that you have, and not only, you know, in a blog, like blog post or whatever, you know, an article way, but you respond to each one of the comments in our group, for example, and like people just are freaking out probably because you're a star now. Like,
it's, well, I mean, it goes back to one last comment. It goes back to actually when I was in college, I was asking I was expressing to my professor that I wasn't happy with where I was at in my career and how to get to where I wanted to be. And she said, reach out. This is where this started. I do this relentlessly every day. I think I cold outreach to someone. It's how I started, right? She said, reach out to someone, go find someone who has the position that you want to have at the end of your career and reach out to them and just explain who you are. Just an aspiring college kid that you admire what they've done in their career and ask if there's any advice that they can give you. And I, to this day, I still do that. And I think that it's one of the best exercises. And I think that translates into, man, I think sharing information is the only way that my stupid monkey brain learns anything. So I see the value that I can provide to other people, and I certainly receive the value that they provide to me. So happy to do it.
Exactly the same. Exactly the same. Awesome. Thanks a lot. And for those who are listening to us, you can find me and John usually on E-commerce Growth Hacks by Sugatan, but now it should become probably E-commerce Growth Hacks by David S. and John. No, Chris. Thanks a lot for listening to us once again, like while we are shooting crap. And at the same time, you know, I hope that we have provided you with enough value to be crushing it in quarter four, in quarter one, in quarter two, and be preparing like to be crushing it next year. Learn from our mistakes, because we are stupid. We made mistakes, but you shouldn't be doing that. You should be learning from our mistakes and not repeating them. So with that said, thanks a lot, John, once again, for coming on this podcast.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you.